Hello, and welcome to the Artificial Intelligence in Drug Discovery podcast. My name is Simon Smith, and I'm your host. On this episode, I speak with Dekel Geldman, CEO of FDNA. FDNA uses facial analysis and artificial intelligence to help doctors diagnose rare diseases. Their technology can also enable personalized medicine at scale through the application of what they call next-generation phenotyping. To me, FDNA is a great example of applied artificial intelligence. Their technology has significant real-world impact and wouldn't be possible without recent advancements in machine learning. I spoke with Dekel about the inspiration for FDNA, how their technology works, applications for drug discovery, and more. This episode is brought to you by BenchSci. BenchSci uses artificial intelligence to reduce the cost of scientific experiments. Use it to find research antibodies up to 24 times faster than using PubMed or Google Scholar. Just enter a protein of interest and filter by technique, organism, tissue, or 12 other options. BenchSci returns only relevant published figures and products. It's free for researchers in academic and nonprofit institutions. You can sign up at BenchSci.com. If you work in industry, just use the contact form on BenchSci.com to reach out for a demo. And now, on to the interview. Okay, hi Dekel. Thank you for joining us.
Hi Simon, thank you for having me.
Great, so listen, I want to start just off the top here by having you describe in your own words what FDNA is for people that might not understand the technology, have any idea about what phenotyping even is. I often think about, let's say you're at a party and somebody said, hey, what do you do? That inevitable question. How do you respond to that? How do you describe what you do in a way that's accessible for people?
That's a great way to put things. So FDNA is first and foremost a technology company. It uses artificial intelligence, and we'll break that term down very soon, to look at signals, external signals about the human physiology, like how the face looks, how the sound, how the voice sounds, how does a patient move, and tries to detect certain patterns. Very similarly to how a physician would go about looking at a patient and evaluating a patient when that patient comes into the clinic. And what we do with that information, with those patterns that we find, is that we correlate them to very specific and subtle differences and changes in a person's genome that could cause a medical condition.
Yeah, so I think the way I've described it to people, and this is the layperson way, of course, I try to describe it to my wife and I'll say, you know, imagine if you had a lot of genetic data and you had a lot of pictures of faces, and then you taught a machine how to make correlations between those faces and the genetic traits. Is that too much of an oversimplification, or is that roughly accurate?
I think it's a good way to think about this. And what I would add to that is that, you know, as human beings, it's hard for us to grasp the volumes of data that are out there and look at all that data as kind of a whole and try to find very distinct patterns in those data sets. What the machine does, and today with a technique called deep learning, so we don't even teach the machine how to do it. We just compile data and ask the machine or the computer to look at all that data and say, what's common to all these data points? When we're talking about facial photos, right? What's common about all these faces that can be a common thread and eventually a sign for you to see?
So I have a question about that, because I think many people listening to this would assume that if a patient walks into a physician's office, into a pediatrician's office, and that pediatrician might already have a sense that something might be off, so why wouldn't they just order a genetic analysis or get the patient's genome sequenced almost proactively, given that the cost has come down so much at this point? Why would the first thing be to use your product?
Well, I think they should, but the cost has not come down that significantly yet. When you look at the starting point of millions of dollars to sequence a genome, yes, we've done amazing. We've reached almost $1,000. It's still fairly expensive to try and say, okay, you know what, something's off. Let's just do a sequence of that patient and see if we can find anything wrong. So the price is still an inhibitor. Beyond that, there's awareness. Not all physicians consider certain signs or clinical symptoms as cause of an underlying genetic problem. And the third thing, and we can get into more detail here, is that this is not a first phenotype, then sequence. And it's not the other way around either. It's not first sequence and then phenotype. These two approaches need to go hand in hand. So phenotyping and genotyping, and to simplify that, the art of, or the practice of looking at the clinical signs together with looking at the underlying genetic differences should go hand in hand. And that is pretty much the only approach that makes sense in order to test for genetic disorders.
I was wondering if you could help me unpack that a little bit. I'm still trying to understand or clarify. So, you know, as I understand it, a lot of these are rare diseases in children. So a child walks into a pediatrician's office, and can you maybe walk me through the steps from there about how they might use an FDNA solution to help with their a diagnosis or even a treatment approach or whatever the process might be?
So I'll walk you through the process of what we call the diagnostic journey or the diagnostic odyssey. Unfortunately, with rare disease patients, and most of them, as you said, are kids. Most of them affect pediatrics. What is probably the most unknown thing about this field of rare diseases is that they're not rare at all. Rare diseases as a group, in aggregate, affect almost 1 in 10 people on the planet. And because so many diseases that individually are rare are grouped into that bucket of rare diseases, we don't really consider them to be rare. And in fact, there's very little awareness of this. The journey, the average journey for a rare disease patient lasts about 7 years. Well, these patients go into doctor's offices with multiple clinical signs. They can come in for recurring infections or learning disabilities or even physical disabilities, speech problems, hearing problems, general development delay. And the first thing that comes to the physician's mind is not necessarily, oh, this is a rare disease and we have to refer this patient to a geneticist. Physicians are trained to hear hoofprints and think about horses, not zebras. And so they send those patients to treat the clinical signs and not the underlying problem. But it's not their fault.
I guess I do want to come back to then how do you... Sorry, I thought I lost you there for a second. I do want to come back to how you manage to reach out to them and even get them to adopt a solution, but maybe we can come back to that in a second. I did want to pick up on one thing you said, that it's 1 in 10 people or can suffer from one of many rare diseases. But I also imagine that that problem is bigger in countries that don't have as sophisticated or comprehensive of a healthcare system. So I'm actually curious to know what the usages of your products, both within, let's say, the I'll use the term developed versus developing countries.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're onto something. The figure that I give you of 7 years is actually for developed countries. And in developing countries, this data doesn't even exist. So we don't even know how long it takes to diagnose patients in developing countries. Now, our products and services are designed very specifically for geneticists. And because there are definitely more geneticists in North America and in Western Europe, predominantly most of our users, the clinical geneticists, are in those territories. But we have a pretty global presence, and we have users, physicians from more than 130 countries around the world. And we're seeing more and more physicians from Asia Pacific, from Latin America, from Eastern Europe, from the Middle East, starting to use this more frequently. But as you said, predominantly North America and Western Europe.
So I want to jump in a little bit here to your background and how you got involved. And specifically, I know you have some co-founders as well, but what was the inspiration to tackle this problem? And we'll take this maybe in two parts. What was the inspiration and then how you got involved?
Well, I think it's basically the same story. As a group, we got involved based on personal acquaintance. I just knew the co-founders. And one of the co-founders has had a previous company that was developing facial recognition technology. In that time, the best facial recognition technology in the world, it was called Face.com. And the idea was, how can we bring this special sauce, this knowledge about facial recognition into healthcare? And what we really went after a task of trying to find a noble cause, something that we find that we can relate to. And we went and interviewed a number of specialists in healthcare. It was when we went into the geneticist's office, the first time we talked to a geneticist, and that geneticist said, that's exactly what we do in practice. We look at faces and we try to remember or come up with a pattern that reminds us of how this patient looks like and a classical manifestation of disease. Then we knew we had something that can solve a problem, but we didn't know how big that problem was. And when we tried to dive in, and we understood, we're talking about 7,000 diseases, and it affects mostly kids, and the diagnostic journey for these kids is on average 7 years, then we knew that we were onto something, and it became our mission. Now, ever since then, it grew and it expanded because we're in this industry, in this space. We're witnessing a lot of shortage in technology that we can help with, but that was the initial trigger for us to get involved.
Yeah, I think one of the things I love about that story too is I see a lot of companies that spin up in the healthcare space saying that they're going to apply machine learning to healthcare that don't really have a strong foundation for what the business need is or what the patient need is even, or what the product market fit might be. So I think the approach that you took of going out and talking to people and trying to determine where there might be a need and then being able to fill that need with a technology that just seems so well suited to it is a great case study in like applied AI. But I do have a follow-up question there, which is, you mentioned earlier about deep learning, and one of the things about deep learning is you need a lot of data. And I can imagine that in this case, almost by definition, because you're dealing with rare diseases, number one, and because you're dealing with healthcare, number two, that it couldn't have been easy to build that initial data set to create something that had any value. So how did you overcome that problem out of the gate?
Well, it was a challenge and it still is a challenge. We started and it took us a lot of time to go through individual collaboration with research groups around the world that had interests in very specific medical conditions, to start training a system and teaching it how to look at patterns or feeding or collecting and curating the data for the system to learn. At a certain point of time, we realized that the data itself is stored in thousands of different silos around the world. So the only way to connect is to connect individually with every clinical geneticist around the world and ask them to share the data with us. Obviously, that's not a reasonable plan. So we came up with a plan, with a different plan. We said, you know, what if we build a platform that can provide value from day one to the clinical geneticist and they would use it. And while using this, they will help us train the system. Mm. And that was really the birth of Face to Gene. And today, face-to-gene is being used by more than 70% of clinical geneticists around the world. And that is a source of data that is training our technology and making it better on a daily basis.
That's great. And I think that's another key takeaway for anybody working in this field is how you can create some kind of data flywheel or feedback loop to be able to continually improve your product. But 70% penetration in that amount of time is significant. I mean, that's quite a success. What was the approach that you took to be able to get that amount of use in such a short period of time? Or was it simply that the product spoke for itself?
I think it's a number of components. The platform is provided free of charge. The product speaks for itself. The community is just an unbelievable community of physicians. I've never encountered physicians that care so much for their patient, involved so much in research. It's a very small and tight community, and they just care, and they're thirsty for these kind of solutions. So from the very beginning, we decided we're not going to try and sell a solution. We're going to try and work in collaboration with the community to develop a solution. From day one, I stood up in front of the audience of clinical geneticists at the American College of Medical Genetics, and I said, we are here to develop this together with you. We will never charge you, and we will always make our technology available free of charge for you. And all we need from you is your help in developing this technology. That was really what promoted this.
That's a compelling story. I do want to come back and touch upon what the business model might be in future or what it might be now. But before I go there, we've talked a little bit about clinicians, but I know that clinicians aren't the only ones who can use the platform. What's the value proposition for researchers? And because this podcast is going to be about AI and drug discovery, potentially specific opportunities related to drug discovery.
I think that when you speak about the human genome, there's much more that's unknown than what's known. And we're still in the midst of trying to understand what is causing specific diseases, what kind of mutations, what's the genomic pathway of disease, what are the biological mechanisms that operate for specific diseases. There's a group of diseases that are called monogenic disorders. These are diseases that are caused by a single mutation. It's fairly straightforward to try and identify which of the genetic variants are causing these diseases. Even with this straightforward approach, there's still a lot of unknown, a lot of diseases that we don't know what their origins are. And this becomes even more complex with the polygenic disorders. So an interaction between various genetic mutations causing a condition. And we go into the world of autistic spectrum disorders, cardiovascular diseases, neurological diseases, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, the future is very exciting in the sense that researchers can use this technology to segment or to cluster patients based on their phenotype and then cross-reference this with genetic information to try and isolate the specific origins and basically correlate the phenotype to the genotype.
Right. And then I assume then that would also help to hone in on potential targets for therapies.
Absolutely. Once you understand the biological mechanisms, once you understand what is causing a specific phenotype, then we're in a much better position to try and match those diseases with a specific biological approaches. Gene editing has a lot of promise, so we'll see how that technology evolves. But yes, once you need to first understand, and once you understand the biology, then it's easier, relatively easier, to come up with treatments.
So I want to switch gears a little bit here, and I know you're not the technologist or the guy who's doing the engineering, but For people who might be interested, can you talk a little bit about the types of machine learning technologies that you're using? And of course, don't give away anything proprietary, or I don't want to have to sign an NDA to have this conversation, but just at a high level, the kinds of technologies that you've been utilizing and developing would help many listeners who might be interested in the technical side.
So, you know, as you said, I'm definitely not the tech person, but I can tell you that there were two phases for FDNA for the company. When we started, deep learning was still something that was not practiced. It was in research phases, and we utilized more traditional machine learning techniques, where we actually had supervised learning, and we tried to have the computer think like a geneticist, and it was successful. Once we introduced deep learning and really allowed the computer to go about finding patterns for itself, the performance just increased very significantly. The challenge for us had become a twofold challenge. One is, how do you keep your system on the cutting edge of deep learning and utilize computing power on the cloud? On one side. On the other side, as you said, we need a lot of data. Now it's more of, how do we focus on the purity of the data? How do we collect data that is that will not need human intervention in QA? So all the QA is done up front before we train the system.
I can absolutely relate to that. I think that people who don't work with machine learning probably assume that the primary challenges are all about writing code, lines of code. But so much of the challenge is about figuring out your data pipeline, figuring out how you're going to scale once you start to collect terabytes or petabytes of data, and picking out the right features. I mean, a lot of it is just a lot of grunt work there, and trying to figure that part out, as opposed to it just being about writing better algorithms all the time. So the pipeline is important. So where do you want to see the product go, or where do you foresee the product going over the next 1 to 2 years, given that technology is progressing so rapidly?
So you were asking, how do I see the products and the technology evolving from this point? And if to date we were focused with our AI mainly on the facial recognition, we have a full roadmap of where we're going with this next. We're actually calling this next generation phenotyping technologies on the basis of next generation sequencing, because it's so complementary. What we've realized is that a physician or a geneticist, when they look at patients, they evaluate faces. Yes, that's a very strong indication. But they do so much more. And we're already in the process of starting to analyze video footage so that we can evaluate the movement patterns of patients, voice recording so that we can evaluate the patterns in the voice that can be indications of specific diseases. We're looking at natural language processing so that we can analyze clinical notes of physicians and correlate that with the genetics of a patient. So basically what we want to do is we want to expand our reach with AI on everything that is capturing, structuring, and analyzing the human physiology, so we can integrate that to the genetic testing.
Yeah, I could see the opportunities there expanding exponentially, as well as the amount of data that you would need to capture. That would suggest to me as well that, and you can answer if you're comfortable doing so, that you're probably thinking beyond rare diseases, that there's an opportunity here to especially given the growth in consumer genetic testing, to expand the footprint of what the product is able to do. Or maybe I'm reading too much into what you said.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that rare diseases is where we started. What we've witnessed through our activities in the rare disease space, in the clinical genomics space, is that genetics really needs this type of technology as a complementary technology for genome analysis or variant analysis. And we strongly believe that genetics is going to play a key role in the future of precision medicine. And this goes well beyond rare diseases. But if you really think about the term precision medicine, by definition, a rare disease falls into that category, right? Because precision medicine is about providing treatment that's tailored to individuals or very small groups of patients that have something in common. A rare disease is exactly that. And when we think about more common diseases, the future is going to segment each of those or split those diseases into very small cohorts of patients that are taken into account or factor in the genetic contribution to those diseases.
Yeah, that's very interesting, thought-provoking, leads me to think that really when you talk about precision medicine, every disease can become somewhat of a rare disease because you're going to increasingly segment down the different subtypes of that disease. And that also allows you to develop treatments for very specific subtypes of disease. So that is, I can certainly see how that path takes you from rare diseases to effectively treating every disease like a rare disease.
Well, no, think about cancer. I mean, cancer has traditionally been lumped some into one big, giant, scary word, but there's so many different types of cancer. And many of those are actually, their legal definition is a rare disease because the treatments receive orphan designations. So this process has already been being done as we speak, and we're going to see more and more of this as we learn more about the genetic components and the genetic causes of diseases.
Thank you. That was all very interesting. I know we're bumping up against our time here. I did want to close with a couple of questions. Before I get there, though, I had mentioned that I was curious about the business model to the extent that you're comfortable sharing what the business model might be for that, given that you give the product away for free currently.
Sure. We give the product away free currently, and we will continue to give the product away for free because this product is designed for a very, very small community of practitioners, clinical geneticists. I always tell my employees, this is the source of our power, so we can't cut the cord. This is how we develop our technology. But as you said, genomics is going to expand exponentially. It's going into consumer genomics. It is going to be a cornerstone in drug discovery and clinical development of therapies well beyond rare diseases. We're a small company. We want to continue to be a small company that specializes in developing technology, and we want to work with partners around the world to license this technology. And we're already working with genetic testing laboratories, with research organizations, with pharma companies in order to integrate this technology into their computerized systems. The future of genomics is going to depend highly on omics technologies, or the future of precision medicine, to be exact. And we are a very strong and notable technology, omics technology, if you will, in the field of phenomics.
I think that might be the first time, and maybe it's my ignorance, that I've heard the term, but I did really like next generation phenotyping, so it's one that'll stick. This is a good point to maybe ask how people can get in touch with you, anybody who might be interested in understanding how they might be able to work with you or use the product. What's the best way to learn more about FDNA or to reach you or any of your colleagues?
The best way would be to visit our website at www.fdna.com. And we have, depending on the purpose of the connection, we have multiple teams, whether it's marketing, customer success, business development, product to speak to. And all the details are on the website. And we invite everyone to come in and talk to us.
Thank you so much for your time. I genuinely learned a lot. I think there's a lot of, I mean, as I said, when I reached out to you originally, this is just one of the most fascinating examples. And and good examples of a strong application of AI where it's clear that you wouldn't have been able to solve this problem without it. So I really appreciate you taking the time and being able to provide some of those insights to our listeners. Is there any question that I didn't ask you that you think maybe I should have asked you or that people might be interested in hearing the answer to?
No, and it was a lot of fun talking to you and a pleasure to meeting you. And I hope that your listeners are going to enjoy this conversation.
You just listened to my conversation with Dekel Gelbman of FDNA. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you want to catch future interviews, be sure to subscribe. Just look for Artificial Intelligence in Drug Discovery in your favorite podcast player. Then hit the subscribe button. Until our next episode, be well and work smart.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.